So welcome to today's Family Tree Talk. And we're very excited because we've got a special guest with us. And she is Karen Evans, who is the Family Tree DNA advisor. So in every issue of Family Tree magazine, she's there giving us tips on what to do with our DNA. So my name's Helen Tovey. I'm editor of Family Tree. With me is...
Nathan Ward. Hello there.
And Karen, would you like to introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Karen Evans. Hello.
Hello. So this is our big topic. What do we need to know when we've done a DNA test? Now, this is very personal to me and Nathan because Nathan's recently done a DNA test and he's a little bit stuck, scared. What do you reckon, Nathan? What are you?
Confused and terrified, I think, is a better phrase. I've done the DNA test. I don't know whether you know, Karen, but I did the DNA test because I wanted to be a Viking. And I'm not.
Yes, I have heard the earlier podcast and the disappointment in your voice when you found out you weren't a Viking. I almost teared up. Almost.
But now I'm doing my research, getting into my family tree, which I actually wasn't really expecting to get as involved as I am. And every now and again, Helen will start talking about DNA and what I should do with my DNA test results. And I'm kind of terrified about it. I don't know where it fits in with the scheme of things. Like, I understand the paper search and looking at the records and adding people to my tree, but I don't know why or when I should shift to using my DNA results.
Okay. So, I mean, how far back have you got? Because I could see that you've been doing a lot of work with Helen on sort of research new branches and how to get the information through paper research. So where would you say you are with your tree at the moment in terms of your direct ancestors?
I'm at my great, great, great grandparents.
Okay. And how many lines would you say you've done that for all of your lines as much as you can? Or one particular line? It's not like this. It looks like, you know, like, you know, it's like homework. It's like, oh no, I've only done that bit of homework. Another, this is not, you're not in trouble if you haven't.
I'm in a lot of trouble. I keep on going off on tangents and finding people to get obsessed by. I've got most people on my great, great, great line, maybe a few more on the one back from that. I'm just sort of dancing in and around that area. I've sort of gone a bit completionist. I'm trying to get all the dates of birth, marriage, and death before I move on to the next set. So I've kind of slowed myself a bit and then I've also got distracted. So I'm making excuses out of whatever.
No. Distraction's the best bit sometimes. You know, no, that's normal. If you weren't doing that, I would say that you're probably not a true family historian. But the fact that you're going down complete weird rabbit holes makes you like one of us, basically. It's like part of it. You've got to go around rabbit holes or otherwise you're just... No, it doesn't work. Okay, then. So I know you took an ancestry test. So, and you've looked at the ethnicity because obviously, you know, you're not a Viking. So have you looked at your matches at all?
I have looked at my matches, but I don't really understand much of what any of it means, if I'm totally honest.
Okay. And then the only thing I'm going to ask before I like launch into my, and Helen's going to stop me talking after about an hour and a half. No, I'm joking. Is that, have you attached your tree that you have so far to your DNA results?
No, I haven't. I didn't even know I could do that.
Okay, then. So what I'm going to suggest, I'm going to talk about a few things and then Helen will butt in if she thinks there's something I'm going down a rabbit hole of my own in DNA terms. And then we'll talk about why it's really useful for you to attach your tree, because what will happen on Ancestry, and there's a couple of other test sites, is if you've got a tree attached to your results, it kind of gives you little clues and hints. They're a bit like everything else. You need to check the clues and hints are right. But if they're not, or if they are, will really help you work out what's going on with your match list. So what will happen is there'll be people who have also put their DNA on there.
Karen, can I just quickly butt in? Because you mentioned that Nathan had looked at his ethnicity estimates because he had managed to establish that he wasn't a Viking. But the problem is, in his headspace at the time, he was so obsessed with being a Viking, so devastated he wasn't. He just looked at it and then left the ethnicity estimates. And so can you just give us a little bit of an overview of what does this ethnicity estimate mean? How does it get arrived at? And what might Nathan be able to learn from it, aside from not being a Viking?
Okay, so really the ethnicity estimate, and it's really personal to each testing company. So what the testing company are basically doing is they're looking at your DNA and they are comparing it to a reference panel of people that they have chosen because those people are supposed to be from a particular area and their sort of family history and their DNA and their sort of trees are saying, yes, they are from there. So they'll choose people and obviously I'm sort of simplifying it, but they'll choose people who say, okay, we've lived in France and this part of France and we've been able to trace our family tree and we're all French, and they'll look at people who are all German and look at people who are Italian and all whose tree show they're all English. Then when your DNA arrives, they'll look at your DNA and go, okay, how does it compare to the other DNA that we know is from a particular area? And so they'll look at you, go, okay, you seem to have a little bit of that kind of area and a little bit of this kind of area and a little bit of that kind of area. And then you get your ethnicity estimate broken up into different segments, if you like, different sections. So you'll have found that you've probably had quite a lot of sort of British Northwestern Europe, and you may have had a little bit of Scandinavian, and you may have had then something to do with Southern European, things like that. So they use their ethnicity estimate is based on their reference panels, and also they've got their own algorithm, which they then use to work that out. And that's the difference between every company. So every company you go to, if you tested at MyHeritage, they have their own algorithm and their own reference panel. So everyone is almost like, it's almost like tagging you and looking at how you match their reference panel and almost going like, you fit into these little segments here, you fit into this little branches here, and they then come out with your ethnicity estimate. So we tend to find, though they're getting better and better, we tend to find the ethnicity estimates are pretty accurate on a continental level. So if you're supposed to be European, you are European. If you're supposed to be African, you're African. Asian, you're Asian. But after that, it then becomes a little bit more nuanced. So because, for instance, and the UK is a really complicated because we've been invaded by so many different peoples, and our DNA is like an admixture. We've come from so many different places that our DNA basically looks like a lot of people in Northwestern Europe and Scandinavian. So it's a little bit like, well, you're kind of like, but so we're kind of all very similar. So you tend to find that people, if they've their trait like mine is, I'm so not a Viking either. Mine is very boringly, you know, we didn't basically leave the British shores, to be frank. So all of my parents are just Northwestern Europe and, you know, the UK. And then my husband, who's got a bit more excitement because he's Irish, he's got a bit of Irish and Scottish, and then, you know, a little bit of something going on sort of in Southern Europe. So it really is all to do with how the testing companies look at your DNA. But what happens is they change their reference panels. They update them, they improve them, they get more and more people. And they also change and update their algorithms. So you'll find that every year or so, they'll update your ethnicity and you'll change. You won't change, but your ethnicity will change. So maybe next time you will be a bit more Viking. You never know. You might wake up in a year's time and an ancestor will go, da-da, new ethnicity. And you'll be like 25% Scandinavian. And then you can get your little horned Viking thing out. And obviously, and we know it's not horned, but you can put it on and sort of parade around. So you can be happy then.
There's still hope for me then.
There's definitely hope for you, definitely.
And Karen, I think it's really worth people establishing in their heads, isn't it, that while the ethnicity estimates might change and they're based on algorithms and people kind of analysing things, then your match list is categorical. If somebody matches you as a first cousin on your DNA match list, they are always, and you've worked out that they are your first cousin and they're sharing the right amount of centimorgans and everything else, they're always going to be your first cousin. Or if you find a long lost half sibling, they're always going to be your half sibling. There's going to be no update that's going to change that because it's down to your genetic code, your unique you.
Yes, yeah, basically, because the reference panel aren't based on you. They're not people who've matched you. They are, if you like, the gold standard for the company, and they're like shining stars of each particular area, and they're just looking at you and comparing you like for like. But your DNA matches are there because they match DNA with you. They have, you have got a shared ancestor somewhere in your line, and that's how you've ended up with the same segments of DNA. And obviously what we always say is, and you'll see this on Ancestry, but with the same with every other company, your match list will show the ones, your matches from the highest amount of DNA they share with you and going down. So obviously the more DNA they share with you, the more they are going to be closely related to you. So I always work on, you know, obviously the best matches are the ones near the top. And particularly then, hopefully, you've got some idea then of how they may be related to you. You know, sometimes people go on and they find that a cousin's tested who they know. But then obviously then there's matches that sort of drop below the numbers a little bit, but you can start working on them. And I always sort of go, particularly when I start, I always sell to people to start at their top matches and work down, because they're most likely to be the ones that you can work out easily in theory. And then, you know, you sort of go down to about, I personally stop at about 30 centimorgans to start with, because it's kind of been worked out that 30 centimorgans or above, they should be, and I'm going should with a big sh, they should be relatable to you by a shared common ancestor within paper research ranges. So people that start dropping below that, they are related to you probably, though I know Helen and you have talked about matches that might be false, but they're more and more difficult. You might not be able to find the paper research, but somebody that shares 200 centimorgans with you, 100 centimorgans, 50 centimorgans, there's a good chance that you're going to be able to find those people within a relative time frame that you can research. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah, that's really cool.
So I suppose it's really a case of you looking at each of your matches, and what they do, each company does, is they'll give you the match or the match name. And obviously that's helpful, because if it's a name that you might recognize or not, but sometimes people use names that you don't know, or letters and numbers, though that's not the end of the world. And then next to that, you'll have some information about how much DNA they share with you, and that's in centimorgans or CMs. And then there'll be a relationship range or relationship prediction. And a bit like, it's not quite the same as an ethnicity, but what people often, this is like the first thing I say to people who've got a DNA test, and they look at their DNA test and go, okay, DNA says this person is a second cousin, right? So I know where I'm going to be looking because they're a second cousin. And the basic thing is that company does not know how you're related to somebody. So it says second cousin, but actually that's their kind of prediction. And if you click on that second cousin, it'll give you other options that that person can be. So the DNA companies are looking at how much DNA you share with this second cousin, but then they're going, okay, it's the right amount for someone who's your second cousin. But if you look at their then drop down list, when you click, you'll see there's different relationships, and it could be any of those relationships. So it could be a first cousin once removed, or a half first cousin once removed. And there's like different opportunities then for you to look at and go, okay, it's around that part of the tree, but it's not going to be that. Now, someone like MyHeritage, and I love MyHeritage, I really do. It's my second favorite after Ancestry, with it. Fantastic tools. It's wonderful. But they put things like third cousin's sister, a brother, or third cousin's daughter, or third cousin's mother. And people, it looks so specific that people go, oh, okay, I know exactly where I'm going to look. And it's not. So it's a case of looking at the match and looking at the DNA and using the relationship relator kind of to give you a broad where you're going to look, but not focusing so much on it's got to be that relationship. So that's like my top tip to start off with, is like, look at those relationships, but don't treat them as though that is the relationship. Because it's the route to madness, that.
Nathan, how are you feeling after all of this information?
I still feel a little bit bamboozled by it. Like, I think my biggest question, and it's a stumbling block in my own mind, is when do I bring in the DNA matches into my research? So, You've just said if I'm going lower than 30 centimorgans, they're not going to be on my paper trail. So am I meant to be using those DNA matches to go with my research that I'm doing on paper, sort of finding clues, etc.?
Okay, so it really depends on, obviously, I don't know all of your traits. So, for instance, I took and got my family to take a DNA test because I'd got missing bits of tray because my grandfather was illegitimate. So the only way I was going to go past that point was to hopefully see matches that would give a clue to where his tree was, what bits, which matches were going to give me a clue to who his father was. But even if you've got like a full tree, so even if you're really lucky and you've been able to find, you know, your parents' parents and their parents and their parents, and you're going back and it's getting ever more and there's no sort of missing parents, it's a really good way of validating what your research is. So I know Helen's been talking to you about, you know, you find out something and you buy a birth certificate, you get a marriage certificate, and that kind of gives you solid information to say that they are your relatives out of all of the many people it could be. So DNA is like another tool. I see it as something else to verify that they are my ancestors, if you like. So if I've got, so my mum's side isn't too bad. There's not many illegitimate misses there. There are occasional ones. But let's say I know who my great-grandparents are. If I can find matches that are related to them via their brothers and sisters' children, that proves to me that they are my ancestors. So basically, let's say I'll take my two times great grandmother. So she's called Hannah Astley Fellows. Okay, so Hannah Astley Fellows, she's my two times great grandmother, and I've got her on the tree, and she got married, and she's had children, and that we're, you know, descended from them. But I've got the paper records. But Hannah Astley Fellows had brothers and sisters. And if I then look on my match list and I can find matches to her brothers and sisters' descendants, that proves in a genetic way that we're related as well. So Hannah Astley Fellows is there, but her brother John Fellows, he got married. And then three or four generations down, one of his descendants is tested and they come up as a match to me or my mom, that's saying, okay, it looks like you were right, not only with the paper, but you've got genetic material shared with John Fellows, because John and Hannah Astley are both related to the same person, and that's our common ancestor. That's like super confusing, I appreciate. That's like, whoa. But basically, that's what you're doing with your DNA. You're either trying to find missing people, or you are trying to say, this is what I think's my trait, but how does the DNA match up with this? Because, and Helen will tell you, our ancestors can be a little bit economic with the truth. So sometimes what they say isn't altogether correct. So you might have found that they say they live somewhere in a particular place and that it's somewhere else, but in the nicest possible way. And I found this in my own tree. So, you know, people say that the dad is the dad, but he's not the dad. So the paper says John Smith is the father of Anne Smith, but actually he's not. So your paper says it's John Smith, but the DNA says, no, it isn't. So it's a really good way of, like, hopefully verifying and going, yep, yeah, there it is. Oh, look, there's John Smith's brothers and sisters and all of their DNA coming down. Or you might go, oh no, I've got no John Smith's relatives, and then I've got all these people I don't know. So it's kind of like that. I see it like a big puzzle, and there's all these matches, and you're like sticking them all together to make your like a picture of your tree. But it's hard work, but it can be done, and it's really, really exciting when you find those matches. So to answer your question in a really long way, is you can do it from now, from what you've got already.
Right. So let's say I've got some strong matches on my tree. Am I looking at their name to find the link, or do I just be like, oh, that's got a high centimorgan, I'll click into their tree and see if their details match, or both? Or
Well, you can work on a variety of things. So if you've got your tree attached, big hint, if you've got your tree attached, then what will happen is Ancestry are really cool because what they've done is they look at your tree and they look at your matches trees and they see if they can find anybody that's the same. So in theory, then you might look at your matches and your second one down, it says common ancestor hint. And you might go on that match and you can see straight away that their tree shows the same ancestor somewhere in their tree as someone that you know is an ancestor in your tree. And then that's lovely because it's like Ancestry have basically started doing the work for you. And then you look back at your records and you look at the tree that's on Ancestry that your match has got and go, okay, let's double check. So I know from what you've talked about that you're from a particular, you know, your family seem to have stayed in one particular area. You say, okay, mine are all the Midlands, so mine are really unimaginative. So you would look and you go, okay, this tree seems to say they're from the same area too. So did my two times great grandfather have a sister called this? Because that's what their tree's saying. Let's have a look. Let's look at the census. Let's look at the documents I've got. Oh, yeah, they did. That's great. Oh, yeah, let's look. And you're sort of checking their tree. So don't just take it as gospel that their tree's right. You look at it compared to your well-researched tree using all the documentation Helen's told you you should have. And you go, okay, yeah, this looks really good. And then you know how that match fits into your tree. And that means that, A, you've got a match, and B, that verifies that part of your tree. And once you've got that, then you are really up and running. Because then you can look at your shared matches and work out how to work those out as well. I feel like I'm just talking at you and I'm really worried. I'm just going, because I will talk at you for ages about Ancestry and DNA.
Yeah, no, I'm still totally confused. No, it sounds brilliant. I do need to link my tree, I guess. I think I've said it before to Helen, I'm scared of interacting with other people because I'm like, I'm so, again, it's my own personal stumbling blocks. I'm so focused on getting all the facts right before I go anywhere else. I don't want to feel like I've done something wrong, which I know is silly because obviously, like you've just said, you can find that things aren't quite the truth from all these documents and things might be different. So I guess I just need to get past that and link my tree. So if I link my tree, it's going to open up new avenues for me.
It is, yeah. So it usually takes between 24 hours and 48. Sometimes it's quicker than that, but I always recommend people. So you link your tree and then when you come back, it's a bit like a little Christmas present to you, your birthday present. You'll click on it and it'll say common ancestors and you'll have it's almost like little three faces stuck together. I don't know best to describe it. It's saying, oh look, these are like all joined to you. And so you'll go down your match list and you'll see this next to the tree, there'll be like this sort of little symbol of three circles. With like a little body attached to the three circles. And that's saying there's a common ancestor. Also, if you look at your match list on the top left-hand corner, you'll see matches and it will say all parent ancestors. And if you click on that, you will then see a whole list of all your ancestors that you've attached to your tree. And you'll see their names and you can run down them and click on them and you'll see if there's any matches that have been found related to that ancestor. And then you can go, okay, it says that match is for that ancestor. Let me go and look at that match. So already you can sort of, there's various ways of like getting to these common ancestors, but that's actually quite a nice visual way of finding matches who are supposed to match via your tree. And then you can sort of look at them and you can research those first. And that's nice because you won't have to talk to anybody if you don't want to, because they've already said, here's my tree, I like you. And you've gone, here's my tree, I like you. And then you can see if, you know, you can swipe. Is it swipe right in left? I don't know. You can sort of look. And then if you like, you decided you match and it looks all friendly, then you can always contact them, go, hi, I think we match and your tree looks like this. And would you like to share information? And then you might get really nice things. You might find there's letters or Bibles or photographs that they've got and you might have things they want to share. But if you don't want to, you don't have to. You can like secretly, quietly say, yes, thank you very much. And put a little smiley face next to that person as much as say, yeah, I know who you are. And just carry on down. And some people don't want to communicate. And that's fine. You know, for every one person that wants to communicate, there'll be 10 who don't. So it's fine. Just stay in your little sort of safe bubble. It's perfectly acceptable.
I do. I mean, I'm not against the idea of sharing. It sounds like I'm really antisocial, but it's more, I feel like once I start sharing, it's just going to explode. And I already feel like I've got so much to do. And it's like, oh, I need to find this person and that person. And then suddenly, yeah, if I get other people throwing loads of other names and numbers at me, it might just make my head explode.
Yeah. So, yeah. So, I mean, I agree. I think until you're comfortable that you know where you are in terms of what you've got and that you can, if you like, cope with the extra info, because as you say, at the moment, you're really at the sort of the start, aren't you? And you're having so much has sort of exploded in front of you, because when you first start, the tree kind of grows exponentially to start with. And it's like so much information that, it's perfect. Is it? The DNA matches are likely to stay there, so it doesn't matter if you don't communicate or talk to people until you're ready. And equally, if they contact you and say, "Oh, look, I can see we match," you can say, "Oh, brilliant! I'm really very much on the start of my journey. I'd love to communicate with you. Once I've got a bit more information, I'll be back." You know, and people are happy for that because you've replied at least with great. Brilliant. I'd love to talk to you at some point. There's no problem with that. And yeah, I think that's perfectly acceptable.
Cool. I've literally just linked my tree as we were talking.
Yes.
The top three matches on my list all have common ancestors apparently already.
Oh, wow. So did you know who they were before?
One of them's my mum's cousin.
Okay.
Another one is a cousin that nobody knew about, so that's intriguing.
Yay.
And then the other one, I've got no clue. There's actually quite a few with common ancestors. Oh, I'm not looking yet, it's too much.
No, don't, yeah, but you can guess, because that'll be the end of your day basically. So that's really good. So what that, I would take that very much as a positive on your research so far, because if you've got your tree that you've made, created, and you've attached it to your DNA results, and your DNA match list is showing lots of matches to your tree, that's looking very positive. Now, obviously, as I've said, the caveat is checking the trees and compare and make sure all the information's correct. But that's really positive, because it's saying your DNA seems to be matching with what you know about your tree, which is also a real positive, because I have people and they have these beautiful, beautiful trees. And like myself, we've spent 30 years on trees, and then the match list went up. So,
and yeah. Also the way the match list goes, it can go two ways, can't it? One way, it can be by a deafening silence that your tree is looking great. You've researched, let's say, you know, all 16 of your 2x great grandparents. You've got their siblings. It's all beautifully fleshed out. You've got lots of matches across lots of your branches. But there's this one little branch, and you try as you might to find some matches on it, you're not finding any matches. Do I sound like I'm speaking from personal experience? And it's actually got all possible names and places you can possibly think of. Go, well, I've got to find somebody. And then you think about, well, you know, was it that one of them was an only child? Or why are the reasons why? Or whatever, what was their persuasion that none of their descendants want to take a DNA test today? And you're trying to think of all these loopholes. But you do have to consider, potentially, you're just not genetically related to that branch that the paper trail says you are related to.
Yeah.
Who knows? I don't know. So this, but you can't kind of leap to any conclusions, can you, Karen? You have to keep, just as with paper trail research, you have to keep feeling your way. Dealing, factual, but it's, there's still, with any circumstances, very often several different possibilities to what the actual answer is.
Yeah, I agree with Helen there. There's two ways of the uh-oh moment of not seeing matches, and people go, that's it, I can't be related. Oh my God, oh my God. But as Helen said, like, I've got one side of my tree, again, on my maternal side, they had like 14 children, my great-great-grandparents. They had 14 children. Nearly all of them survived to adulthood, and nearly all of those had large families. Needless to say, I have lots of DNA matches to those, because there's just so many of them, you know, I could trip over them in a supermarket. There's a ridiculous amount. But on one of my sides, the person was an only child of an only child of an only child. So there simply isn't any matches other than that direct line. So it doesn't mean it's wrong. It just means there is no matches. So I always look, there's like another check. So the thing is if you, and obviously it'll take a while because of, you know, you're starting out, but once you start looking at your matches, if you've got a group of matches that don't seem to fit into your tree at all, and you've got a bit of your tree that you can't find matches with, that's when it kind of needs to go, I haven't got any matches on my sort of great granddad's line, but I've got all these matches and they don't fit anywhere. And it's like, I wonder where they could be. So that's kind of like a dual hit. So sometimes that happens. So when, like, obviously working with a magazine, I have people come to me and go, oh, I've found like a second cousin and a DNA test must be wrong because they don't match and I don't know any of these names. And I look at the tree and they haven't great granddad's, none of his DNA is there. None of any of his relatives' lines are there. And then this other match, this person's got loads of matches to someone in their tray. And it's like, I think somebody was a little bit naughty somewhere along the line. And then usually you find they like next door neighbours, or they, in one case they lived there, we found out who it was, and it was basically they lived in the garden behind the garden. So obviously somebody was like skipping over the one garden into the other garden to say hi. The paper wouldn't have reset. You wouldn't have shown that because, you know, and sometimes I'm not saying that people are particularly telling fibs, but sometimes perhaps they just didn't realise that, you know, that the person they were sort of had a short fling with was actually the dad of the child that they brought up. So, you know, it's sometimes it's not deliberate obfuscation. It's a genuine belief that that's the right way it is. So, and I think the thing is, the further back you go and the more you find about your ancestors, the more you'll realise that, you know, things happen and we can't judge them on what happened. And it's interesting then just to see. It's another part of the story. You'll just go down another rabbit hole then of finding who the daddy was.
Yeah. Well, they seem to be the interesting parts as well, don't they? Like, I've got somebody who's been married twice and as far as I know, nothing dodgy going on, but it creates a new path because there's more children from different lines, and it's really interesting, that side of it.
Yeah.
Can I ask a random question that's not quite related, but it's in my head? I watched a video that you've done for us for Family Tree, you and Laura House of Ancestry, talking about genetics. And Laura mentioned that she got excited about something and wanted all of her family to test. What's the advantage of having your family test? Like, is there any point my mum testing because I've done it?
Oh, gosh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I'm not actually on Ancestry because I've tested my mum and dad. Because basically, my DNA is their DNA. So there's no point me testing because I'm not going to get anything that's not already them anyway. And really, What you do is, so autosomal DNA, which is what an ancestry test is made up of, it's kind of, you get in 50% from your parents and you get roughly 25% from a grandparent. And then it's if you like, and it's not quite that simple, but it's almost every time you go back a generation, the amount of DNA you could share with an ancestor is halving. And what we're doing with a test is we're looking to find matches who share that common ancestor. So by the time you get back to like a third great-grandparent, the amount of DNA you share with that great-grandparent is quite small.
Mm.
And the person who also came from that great-grandparent via another line also only shares a small DNA. And for you and that person to match, you've got to share the same bits of DNA from that great-great-grandparent.
Yeah.
So if you test your parents, they're immediately one level further back in your tree. So suddenly they're going to share more DNA with that great-great-grandparent because they're not their great-great-grandparent, they're their great-grandparent. So they're going to share more DNA. So the further back you can get a tester, the better, because they share more DNA with your further ancestors. So if, for instance, you had a grandparent alive, say your mum's mum was alive, you'd test her because obviously she's even closer to your great-great-grandparent because she's going to share more DNA with that person. And the other, so there's the closeness. So yes, your parents. So once I took a family tree DNA test at a show, but basically after that, it was my parents who I basically corralled into testing and their brothers and sisters. Because the way DNA works as well, and you know, I said about the bits of DNA coming from an ancestor. So the way the DNA is recombines and the way you get DNA, it means that if you have a sibling, their DNA will not be exactly the same as your DNA, even though you share the same parents. You'll get some DNA from your parents, which is the same, and some different. So what you imagine is if we work on that, your sibling may have DNA from a great-great-grandparent that you haven't got, and they then match with a match that you didn't get, and vice versa. So basically, you once you get into it, you DNA anybody that doesn't stand still, who stands still long enough, is basically it. So, you know, you pin them down at Christmas parties and birthdays and go, oh, hi, you know, would you read and find out? And if you're comfortable, will you spit into the tube for me? Thank you, bye. And that's it then. If they want to be involved, and, you know, and sometimes people do, like, oh, what happened? I want to know my ethnicity. But if not, even so, you can then control their test. You can manage their test. And you've got, it's like more matches and more people to look at. So right. It can become crazy. But basically, that's a really testing your parents. If your parents are alive and your grandparents is absolutely like the best thing to do.
Right. So it's like trying to pull in the bits of missing DNA you don't have from your family.
Yeah, exactly like that. Exactly like that, Nathan. Cool. Yeah.
So I feel as though this is really good progress for you, Nathan. So you've linked your tree just while we've been chatting, which is fantastic. And Karen, you've touched on so many cool things that Nathan can do next. You just mentioned in passing, oh, you can group your matches. And I think we're going to have to bring you back a different day and have a whole conversation just about grouping. But I think like Ancestry, well, we're just talking about Ancestry because you've tested with Ancestry, Nathan, but it has so many useful tools. And for me, especially, and I think Nathan would relate to this, you can easily feel as though you're getting too much information and so you're going to forget what's what. And what do you think about, do you use the notes tools on Ancestry, Karen, to keep notes of anything interesting, any thoughts you have about a DNA match? Because you can write those little notes in and only you see them, don't you? So your matches aren't going to see whatever you write. So you can write very personal surmises. I think we're related this way. And you can, it's a useful way to keep track of your progress and thoughts even before you get to the grouping stage, would you say?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so what I do, there's various things I've done over time, and you're right, whatever you put on your DNA test, whether you use the color dust, your star, whether you put question marks on the notes, only you can see that on your match list. Your matches aren't going to see anything you write. So what I tend to do, because obviously I'm not as organized, because I've heard you and Helen talking about, or you keep it. I was listening to your podcast and I felt so guilty because I am such a butterfly. And it's like, did I look at that before? I'm sure I haven't. So anyway, but that's going by the by. But with DNA, I'm a little bit more controlled. So in the notes, I usually put so I would almost do like a quick name list back. So I'll say, common ancestor, so MRC, so most recent common ancestor, MRCA, and then I would put who they are, the most recent common ancestor, if I'm already like clustered, and then we'll just put from, and I'd almost do like the line back, so it would be, so Hannah Astley Fellows, and then I would put which child it was to the match. So I'm going Hannah Astley Fellows, daughter Maria, her son John, match. So I can see the line when I open it. So obviously you don't need to do that so much if you can see the tree. Someone's got a lovely common ancestor tree and you've matched. But once you start doing the trees and you've worked them out, then that's like a little way of keeping a way of marking who they are. So you look at the name, you look at the note and you go, okay, so they are from, and it goes along this line. So that's how I do it. But you can do it any way you like. I mean, and sometimes if it's a match that I don't know, I'll write down who could it possible be or who. I mean, yeah, you do it in any way you like. Sometimes I look at my notes and I've got like tons of information on things I've researched and done with them. Can't be this person. This isn't working. That hasn't done. Or I literally only know when I know what I've done with them in terms of how they work. And also a lot of time, and again, once you start looking at your matches and they haven't got trees and you've got to start making trees, then you have to like note down whether you've started making a tree for them somewhere else. But that's like a little bit in advance. And don't scare you, because that's the really fun. That is fun. That is brilliant fun. I love the trees.
Yeah, you think, yeah, they are cool. That is cool. So for Nathan, he's got his few high matches that he mentioned. And I think this is worth establishing. So you might have 20,000 DNA matches, and most of us, or none of us, are ever going to look at all of our DNA matches. So when you actually drill down to it, there'll probably be quite a small number who are sharing a useful number of centimorgans with you. So straight away, that can kind of take away a bit of the overwhelm, because you're like, I'm just not going to bother with any of those more distant matches. And so then you've kind of got your subset, which could only be maybe 15, 20 or 30 people who are sharing over 50 centimorgans or something. That's quite normal, isn't it, Karen? With
absolutely.
Just Giles people, like, if you're American, you're going to have more closer matches. But for us, we could only have 15 or 20 people that are going to be really properly useful to you. So that's immediately more doable, isn't it, Nathan? But 20,000.
Just see it as like what I would do on the first, and is just look at that first match and just, you know, just get any information you can from it. And then, you know, then look at the, so you know the two matches, and then go and look at that third match and see what you can work out about it. Because that's like the exploring thing. But yeah, don't sort of, what would be nice, obviously, because you've got your common ancestors, is have a play with those. Have a go and have a little look and click around. So you've had a little play with your thing. Then once you've kind of got that out of your system, then you can go back and, as Helen says, systematically start looking at those matches and finding out the information from it. What I would say is the danger is, and this is like another tip, is don't do, because you can do searches, don't search by your surname. Because unless you've got the most unusual surname in the world, you will have matches who have got those and surnames, and they will have matches in their trees with those surnames. Like if you were a Smith, you wouldn't go and put Smith in the search engine in your matches, because like 60% of the trees would have a Smith in them, and they can't all be related to you via Smith. So just be really careful, because that's and I did it as well. First thing I did was like, oh, I put that name in. And actually I found out that, and I had some matches to that name. And then ultimately I found that that wasn't a DNA name anymore for me, because of what happened with my match list. So I had matches with names that didn't actually match anymore. So yeah, look at your match list, look at those nice, easy top ones and see what you can find out from those. And sort of get the idea, start clicking around. What I say to people whenever is click on all the different things, try the search buttons, see what they do, look at, so you know, follow the different things, a bit like you've been doing with your going down a rabbit hole with your paper stuff. Just have a little play, because whatever you do won't destroy the DNA test or the match list, or and anything you try you can just reverse if it doesn't work, so that you just get used to that match list, and then you can come back and start looking at how to share your matches and cluster them, because that's really going to be a big way of working through your DNA test.
Okay, brilliant. All sounds terrifying.
So I think that's really cool what Karen told you, because she's told you a key do and a key don't. Like, don't fall into the trap of fixating on surnames. Like, I can't resist having a search. I do search on surnames, but just... just don't fall into that trap, and then do concentrate on those few high matches you've got, because because they're high matches, they're going to be more closely related to you on your tree. So suddenly that's in a more manageable branch space, isn't it? It's not like some dim and distant branch you haven't done yet. You've done those close branches. It's going to probably, fingers crossed, fall into place quite clearly for you, and then you'll see how the things come together.
Yeah, hopefully. Well, I mean, obviously that's my homework sorted anyway.
It is your homework sorted.
Yeah, go and have a look at your high. So look at your common ancestors that share 30 centimorgans or more with you. There's not going to be loads and loads unless you're a very lucky person, though it seems like you've got quite a few, that which is lovely. Look at those common match ancestors and just have a quick look. Don't need to do anything. They have a quick look and see if where they show where your tree is and go, oh, that's that side, that's that side. So you just start to get a feel of your match list, and then you can then go back and then you can start looking at your top match and just see what that actually tells you. And then by then you've had a little play, because then you've pressed buttons and looked at things. Then you're ready to sort of use your match list and start finding things out that aren't like instantly recognizable.
All right, cool. That's when we'll need you back to help me get past it all.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to hearing about your, about which one, which of your trees are obviously, you know, which branches are obviously like clear and present.
I think it's going to be so exciting to hear your progress, Nathan, because it's one of those things when you actually start doing it, that's when it starts to make sense. Otherwise, it is just this vague, weird, something like trying to cook someone explaining to you a recipe for a meal and you don't actually cook it and you haven't got a clue what's happening. And then once you start doing it, then it all makes sense, much more sense. So yeah. Thank you so much, Karen, for sharing all your wonderful tips. If anyone would like to catch up with Karen's advice, then there's lots of ways you can do that. So every month in Family Tree, she writes a wonderful article. It's called the DNA Worship article, and it covers, sometimes it's case studies with reader questions to do with DNA, and other times it's tips on how to use the tools or tactics on how to work with our DNA match lists. So Karen is full of good advice in the magazine. She's also the news anchor of our monthly DNA club, and that's part of Family Tree Plus membership. And if you can't remember all these details, then just sign up for our e-newsletter, and that's at www.family-tree.co.uk/newsletter-sign-up. I hope I've got that right. And then you can keep up with us and keep up with all the DNA news and advice. And thanks so much, Karen, and good luck, Nathan.
Thank you. Thank you, Karen. That was brilliant.
No, thank you. Sorry, Nathan. I feel like I've just like thrown about 20 ton of information at you. Go for it.
I'm going to book a week off work now just to do it.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely worth it. I'd love to do that.
You said thanks for listening.